And now it's time for us to discuss more of these headlines and simple keywords with Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena. Happy Monday. 2 days to go until the election.
That's right. D-2 and with a record early voting turnout. What does this mean for the main party or ruling party or the opposition? That's what we'll get a closer look at throughout today's show. All right, let's get started. Our first pick of the day.
Record early voting.
So the efforts by parties to get voters to cast their ballots early seems to have paid off as the turnout in early voting hit an all-time high for general elections. Was there a time we paid closer attention to parliamentary elections? Turns out no. This is a first.
Right. Yeah, it certainly was a record turnout. And yeah, there's been a lot of attention by the rival parties to get voters to the early voting, especially after concerns after overseas voting. They didn't really have that much of an anticipated turnout. It was held Friday and Saturday. Over 13.8 million people participated, pushing the early voting rate beyond 30%. This is actually the first instance of early voting in a general election exceeding the 30% mark. It's approximately 4.5 percentage points higher than the previous general election, but it is slightly below the highest early voting rate of 36.93% that was recorded during the last presidential election. Now, rival parties have interpreted this high turnout differently. As early voting commenced at 6 a.m., eager voters properly lined up at polling stations. By 11 a.m., the turnout had already surpassed 30%, and by noon, lengthy queues had formed at most voting locations. South Chola boasted the highest turnout at 41.19%, followed by North Chola and Gwangju. Daegu recorded the lowest early voting rate at 25.6%. Now, the People Power Party viewed the substantial early voting rate as a testament to the election's importance, calling for public judgment against the opposition, which has wielded its 180-seat majority with unchecked powers, they put it, over the last 4 years. Meanwhile, the Democratic Party interpreted the enthusiastic participation as a clear desire to judge the Yoon administration. So, of course, interpreting it in their own advantageous ways. Now, with the record-setting turnout for early voting, there are predictions that the turnout for Election Day itself will also be high as well. So we'll have to see.
But just to look at where the voter turnout was high for early voting, I mean, Chola provinces is normally known as a DP turf, right? And election history indicates higher voter turnout for Liberals. But we'll have to wait and see, as you've said, that both parties interpret it their own way.
Yes.
I guess that's natural.
It's the natural, of course. Yeah.
With seemingly so much at stake. Now, rival parties are making last-minute efforts to, of course, sway voters. I know a lot of these English articles are saying woo voters. I'm not a big fan of the word. It feels kind of archaic. So how about swing voters? So what have they been up to?
Yeah, that's probably a better term for it. I mean, it sounds a bit romantic.
Right? And there's nothing romantic about these last-ditch efforts.
Right. So there are last-ditch efforts, mostly because that these kind of voters are on the fence about who they should vote for. So, of course, the rival parties will be targeting them, trying to get them on board their camp. Now, the PPP leader Han Dong-un canvassed the central city of Taejeon and its surrounding Chungcheong provinces. This is his third visit to the region since kicking off campaigning last month. The area is considered a swing state, with one of the highest number of constituencies the PPP considers are too close to call. Now, he promised to develop the region by boosting the research and development budget for sciences and technology, as well as reiterating his pledge to relocate the National Assembly building to the city of Taejeon. Now, the DP leader, Lee Jae-myung, campaigned in his constituency of Kaeyang in Incheon. He then visited the three conservative districts in Seoul's Gangnam district, considered a stronghold of the PPP. So he's trying to possibly sway voters there to the Liberals. Now, he urged voters to hold the government of President Yoon accountable for mismanaging state affairs, while accusing Yoon of abusing his presidential power to pursue personal benefits. Now, of course, as has been the case with many general elections in the past, it usually constitutes a lot of mudslinging between the rival parties. If you see the banners that are hung on the streets of Seoul and anywhere else that you may pass, it's usually kind of criticisms of the other rival party rather than kind of, you know, promoting their own pledges and policies. So more of the same this time round. Now, the People Power Party anticipates securing between 110 and 130 seats based on proportional representation votes and performances in contested areas. The DP maintains its forecast of having an advantage in at least 110 constituencies. So they're both, you know, optimistic about their chances, which is, of course, natural going into the election with only 2 days left. So they're going to try and seem as if they're at an advantage and as if they're winning to try and get people to, you know, ride the wagon, as they say, on the winning side. But yeah, we'll have to see, of course, until the election ends. That's where we'll get the better picture with the exit polls as well.
All right. I mean, this is an increasingly polarized political arena, and usually leading up to the last few days of the election, you're right, it's when negative campaigning gets doubled down. Try to weed through the noise to get to some of the pledges. The DP has put out 286, PPP 301. It's tough to keep up, but we'll try to clarify some in our second hour. Thanks for getting us started, Adam.
I just want to say, if you are interested in their individual policies and pledges, they are available on the election website. So if you want to cut in Korean, yes. But you know, there's a lot of translators out there for if you're not that proficient in Korean. But yes, so if you want to weed through the negative campaigning, that is an option.
I was trying to do a plug-in, or stay tuned for our second hour. Our talks with Professor Kim Byung-ju might get you caught up.
Well, there's that as well. So I think that'll be a better option.
I kid. Let's move on to our second keyword of the day.
Tomahawk launches.
So a top U.S. military official says the U.S. Army will deploy ground-based launchers capable of firing SM-6 and Tomahawk missiles in the Indo-Pacific region soon. Can you tell us more?
Right, so the Army Pacific Commander Charles Flynn was speaking in an interview with the UNAP News at Camp Humphreys during his visit here to Korea. While he did not specify the exact timing or location of the deployments, he did indicate that the SM-6 and Tomahawk missiles are the ones to be deployed. Now, the U.S. uses a missile system known as Typhon that can launch both Tomahawk and cruise missiles and SM-6 missiles. The Tomahawk can travel around 1,600 kilometers depending on the type. The SM-6 can hit targets over 400 kilometers away and finds its own targets with built-in radar. This decision follows the U.S. leaving a treaty in 2019 that used to limit such missiles. Now, the plan to deploy these missiles is seen as a way to check China's power in the region. Flynn also talked about how cornering North Korea's missile tests are North Korea's missile tests are saying they cause instability. And he noted that Russia using North Korean missile technology in combat could teach North Korea valuable lessons about their missiles. And he emphasized the importance of the alliance between the U.S. and South Korea in protecting the peninsula and mentioned efforts to improve cooperation between U.S. and South Korean military training facilities to enhance their ability to work together. Now, Flynn also highlighted the value of increasing training exercises, not just between the U.S. and South Korea, but also including Japan. He referenced a seminar in Japan that showed this kind of cooperation and suggested it would be good for the armies of South Korea and Japan to train together in places like Hawaii or Alaska. Now, while there have been joint Navy and Air Force drills between the U.S., South Korea, and Japan, ground force training involving all three nations has not happened yet. This is, of course, partly due to sensitivities about Japanese forces operating on the Korean Peninsula. So if it were to happen, then, of course, it would spark a lot of backlash from especially the Korean people regarding... it's a bit of a touchy subject, of course, considering Japan's colonialism of Korea in the past. So only having any ground troops on Korean soil, of course, is a sensitive issue.
And with that, we move on to our third keyword today. Turn your attention to the space sector.
Spy satellite.
So South Korea will soon launch its second domestically made military spy satellite from Florida. What are its capabilities? Why do we need a second launch? So let's get a closer look at the latest.
Yeah, so this is all part of a big plan to launch multiple spy satellites into orbit. This time, the satellite is aboard SpaceX's Falcon 9 rocket again, the same as the first time, and it's ready for launch. It launches at 8:17 a.m. today, Korea time. That is the plan anyway, so in about an hour's time. The satellite is set to separate from its rocket some 45 minutes after launch. It'll establish communication with the ground station around 9 minutes after separation, and successful communication confirming the satellite's status as normal will mark the launch as successful. Now, the second launch comes about 4 months after the first one in December. The second satellite is equipped with a high-performance imaging radar known as Synthetic Aperture Radar, or SAR. It's the first satellite carried electro-optical and infrared cameras, so it differs in that respect. Now, SAR can capture images day and night regardless of weather conditions by sending electromagnetic waves to the target and synthesizing the reflected signals into images. The first one, using the EO and IR satellites, checks on the Korean Peninsula twice a day, but the SAR satellite does so about 4 to 6 times a day. This means the military can perform twice as many reconnaissance activities with the launch of the second satellite. Under South Korea's 425 mission, a total of 5 satellites will be launched into orbit by the year 2025 to boost surveillance of the Korean Peninsula. And of course, this all comes amid North Korea's growing nuclear and missile threats.
We've been told by our space expert that the aim is to, by the year 2030 or so, that's just an estimate, that we'd want to check up on North Korea every 2 hours or so using these multiple surveillance means. We'll wait and see what comes next. All right, let's move on to our fourth keyword. Are we possibly looking at a breakthrough on the medical strike? This is our fourth keyword of the day.
Meaningful talks.
So the Korean Medical Association has positively evaluated the meeting between President Yoon and trainee doctors. That's despite the representative of the resident doctors saying otherwise. Now, even though it did not yield any significant results, the fact that they're having sit-downs doesn't mean something.
Yeah, so after their talk, the head of the residents group posted on social media that there's no future for healthcare in Korea. We mentioned that after their meeting last week, but the KMA said it was meaningful to have a sit down in itself. Now, they see the recent meeting as a positive step that could lead to more productive talks in the future. This was the first time the KMA's emergency team actually talked about this meeting. However, they did make it clear that they still don't agree with that number of 2,000 in terms of additional medical school spots. Now, they're planning to hold a joint press conference with teachers, residents, and students from medical schools after the election. That's because they want to present a unified voice. And this is to address criticisms of previous kind of fragmented messages from the medical community, basically saying that they're saying different things. It seems to be the case this time around as well, because the residents, of course, weren't really happy with their talks with the president, but the KMA is basically saying that, well, you know, you've been talking, which is a good step. So we'll have to see how the residents think about that comment. Now, the government has expressed its willingness to discuss all issues, including the quota itself. There's a growing consensus on the urgent need for renewed dialogue, of course, between the government and medical organizations. This is, of course, to prevent the further strain on patients and medical staff who are still working, and the prolonged medical vacuum that's persisting. Prime Minister Han Duck-soo's recent comments suggesting flexibility on the planned increase in medical school admissions have been seen positively by the medical community as well. They are asking the government to show its sincerity by stopping the current process related to increasing admissions, which they believe would encourage residents and medical students to return to work and the classrooms as well. So the KMA sees some light at the end of the tunnel. We'll have to see if the residents and school students see eye to eye on that as well.
All right. For now, waiting on that joint press briefing after the elections. Can it lead through a breakthrough of the prolonged medical strike that has already surpassed 2 months in time? We'll leave it there for now as we can move on to our final keyword of the day.
CSAT cost.
So education authorities have begun developing statistics on private education expenses of students who take the college entrance exam multiple times. This comes amid concerns that they're paying too much. First, we must figure out how much they're spending, right?
Right. So that is basically, there's not really been much data on that. It's usually centered around school students, so elementary, middle and high school students, and how much they're paying for private education, not so much as these repeaters or retakers. Now, the education ministry is launching a project to figure out how to survey these costs. And the study aims to define what constitutes a so-called repeater or retaker, analyze their characteristics, and develop a survey for a sample study. Usually, people who do retake these exams are ones who don't get it to the college they want, so they basically try again by taking it again the following year. Now, by the end of November, the ministry plans to review the survey system and conduct a pilot survey on repeaters' private education expenses next year. And this all comes as more students are taking the CSAT again to get into college, and it's believed they are spending a lot to prepare. Now, this also comes as the number of high school students taking the CSAT has gone down, but the number of retakers has gone up. Now, for example, the cost, monthly tuition fees at preparatory academies in Seoul's Taechidong, for example, started around 2 to 3 million won, amounting to about 20 to 30 million won over 10 months. So it is an expensive area to mention, but it is a high cost to prepare to retake the exam nonetheless. And this survey and related statistics, the education sector believes it could lay the groundwork for policies to alleviate their financial burden. But of course, defining these repeaters and developing the survey method could prove to be a challenge. And so the ministry will plan to use various analysis methods, and they're going to execute the survey in collaboration with Statistics Korea.
Thank you very much, Adam, for today's coverage. Have a good day, and we'll see you tomorrow.
You too. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.